The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence. And now here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Hello, listeners. This is Divya Parekh. Welcome aboard. And I want to share that our guest today is Dr. Jameela Battle, and she's still wrapping up her clinic. So hopefully she'll be able to join us. And if she's not, then my esteemed colleague, Rebel Medler, she, as usual, is phenomenal and has agreed to just have a conversation, and you can eavesdrop in one of the days in our lives. So welcome, Rebel.
Hi, thank you. Divya, we have a caller. Caller 734, go ahead. Caller? We do have a caller on the line. Caller, we can't hear you. You might be on mute. The area code is 734. Okie dokie. I guess we'll come back to the caller. So how
Absolutely.
Are you?
I am doing good. How about yourself?
Going a little crazy today, as usual.
I know. And what's so funny is, listeners, you know, today, in the morning, I get this, at that time, my internet was working. I get an email from Rebel that there's an internet outage, so stay tuned. It's possible that we may not be able to do the show. We don't know what's happening. And lo and behold, right after that, I find out that I'm not able to access my email. I'm not able to access my phone because the phone is digital. So what's happening is the phone has gone. And
hello.
Hello.
Hi. Our caller's back. Can you hear us?
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear us?
I can hear you guys. I'm in my car. I'm not sure if that's why you can't hear me.
No, we can hear you now.
Okay. This is Dr. Battle. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Battle. How are you?
I just finished up clinic. Literally, so I'm driving, but if I need to pull over, I can pull over in the Chick-fil-A parking lot, and instead of being kind of not focused, you know, so I can be more focused.
Just be safe on the road, please.
Yeah, and you know, we are having a conversation, so, you know, we are going to go and let our listeners know what happened in our lives today, and so pull up, get settled, and then we talk.
Okay. All right. Let me pull into Chick-fil-A.
No, sounds great. So, listeners. Yeah, listeners, continuing the story. What happened was internet's down and I had back-to-back calls on Zoom today. And today, out of all days, the internet outage decided to be gone for the whole day. And now, long story short, it's how dependent we have become on the technology. And what happens? So, Rebel, would you like to share how was your experience throughout the day?
Oh, man, it was kind of crazy because I require the internet to work. And I was shuffling around trying to get people to cover shows and having to throw shows on replay today. It was not a pretty picture.
Oh, I can tell you that, like, because, you know, what happens is if you're on Zoom, you don't even have a phone number, and I had to go to Starbucks. So initially I was so stressed out, and then I was like, okay, I talk about mindfulness all the time. How can I bring that mindfulness to the situation right now? So literally, it was freezing cold, so I could not go for a walk, but I decided to bundle up, and I just went for a 10-minute walk, which I did not have time. I knew I couldn't get in touch with people, and I was like, okay, let me think what can be done. I go to Starbucks, and then I started using the Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn to connect people, and accordingly from that, I was able to salvage all my calls, let people know that, hey, I've not just disappeared from the face of the earth and I'm not responding. So it does help when you're mindful and when you're present in the moment. So when things go wrong, you can handle the situation. And how did you deal with it, Rebel?
I managed to use my smartphone, which has data, not so much anymore, but, you know, use the data of my smartphone to to try to manage around it. It is terrible that we are so dependent on these things nowadays. I mean, what did people do before all of this stuff?
I know. We used to live before without these technology, and it's amazing how soon we have become dependent on it. And it just pays back, you know, it pays back to getting grounded and thinking about what else can be done. And see, you came up with the idea that, okay, if my data goes, my data goes, but I can make use of it and reach out to people. So there are always alternatives. That's what we are driving towards.
Yeah, it's just not always easy. And it's a shame that we've become so dependent. Like, my boss yells at me if I don't hurry up and read my emails. It's like, seriously, why? He's like, that's life these days. You have to respond immediately. Like, I'm sorry, I have other things that are scheduled prior to emails, you know? And he's like, you need to multitask and do everything. I said, well, you know, I'm pretty good at multitasking, seeing as I do like five things at one time anyway. But, you know, sometimes I just need a break.
Oh, yeah. And that break is so important. And as we are talking about the break, the key is that, you know, the brain works in chunking. The brain will take the information and chunk it into pieces and bits and pieces and where it categorizes it. So it's important that we also chunk the information. And when you chunk the information, brain is able to perform better. And if you work, let's say, usually if you work 55 minutes and then take that 5 minutes of break, having that clock on your desktop or on your smartphone is so helpful.
Yeah, you just need to try to find that time. That's the difficult making the time.
It's difficult making the time. You are absolutely right. So Rebel, I know you are so busy helping us take care of the back end. You're just amazing. None of us could have a show without you. So what is it like, you know, could you share a couple of techniques that helps you get through the day and stay sane?
getting through the day, maybe staying sane, not so much. You pull up the bootstraps and you move forward. That's all you can do, because if you get stuck in it, it's just going to drag you down like quicksand. So you literally just pull up the bootstraps and figure out something. You got to brainstorm it, and you got to be able to brainstorm it quick.
Oh, I love it. Pull up the bootstraps. And I love that phrase. I really love it. Pull up the bootstraps and just go, right? Just go.
Absolutely. Doc, are you situated now?
Uh-huh. I am parked in the parking lot.
Fantastic.
I just know, for me, I didn't want to be driving and not focus on this wonderful conversation, because like you were saying, you know, we are so distracted nowadays with technologies and things like this that we've lost sight of focused attention. So I'm like, you know what? I want to really be engaged, because this focused attention really is a part of what I teach even in my healing platform to get people kind of back integrated. And, you know, technology distracts us from that, the lost art of focused attention.
That is so true, Dr. Battle, you know. And so you okay if I call you Jamila?
Yes.
So yep. It must be one of those days, Jamila, you know, like you are wrapping up your clinic and here we are again, like in a crunch and thinking, okay, what are we going to do? And then I said, Rebel, are you up for a conversation? And she, being the trooper she is, she said, yeah, I'm ready for a conversation. So this is, again, thinking on the feet, you know, it's just amazing.
I'm telling you, it's hard to always, I plan for ending, you know, at 6:30, 7 o'clock, but sometimes, you know, when you have someone that walks, because I take walk-ins, I had someone that walked in right at 5 o'clock, I'm so happy. I saw them, and I didn't turn them away. They had an amazing story. And, you know, it's very unpredictable Mondays with the addiction clinic because this is where I see patients. And, you know, I treat the addictions. I talk with them about kind of the techniques and the things that I've done to overcome my history of early childhood trauma and the fact that both my parents were addicted to substances and what that did to our family. And so there's, I think if it's Mondays are always exciting for me because it feels like, you know, I'm practicing kind of the kind of medicine purposefully that I've created. But it's always unpredictable. And so I was like, I'm wrapping up. I'm doing clinic. But very thankful that I did not turn this patient away. They're on the right track now. And that's really what it's about, helping people to kind of get back, you know, to being productive, being happy, being available to their families. And so, you know, and it's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you. And so I'm here.
No, that's fantastic. Ah, so we already have questions coming up. And I'm sure, Rebel, you're reading one of that, that, you know, it sounds like Rebel knows things. And listeners, I'll tell you, yes, Rebel knows wonderful things. And I'll tell you, she is just phenomenal. And sharing along the lines, I would like to tell you that our Dr. Battle, our guest, is also very phenomenal. Actually, I met her last year in one of the conferences. I was in a writer's retreat, and I was one of the panelists talking about the books as to, you know, how can you write a book? How can you take a book to the bestseller? And since I'm the author of 12 books, going on to my 13th book, and long story short, so we connected over there and we really felt this great energy going. And then we kept on moving and we have been really friends and more like sisters after that. So Dr. Jamila, I'm going to be telling a little bit about her bio. So that way you know a little bit details. And I know today we have started our show backwards, but which is fun, right? Sometimes it's nice to have a different way of going about starting the conversation and then bringing in the introduction. Okay, so I'm going to share a little bit about Dr. Battle. She is an MD doctor. And because the questions are coming in, so I'm also talking about that. Is that okay, Jamila?
Oh, that's absolutely fine.
Fantastic. You know, you, as always, are a trooper. So one of the questions was, what kind of doctor you are? You want to take that? The questions are coming in. I think some.
Oh my gosh! Okay, so I am a award-winning triple board certified family, sleep, and addiction physician. So I touch on three areas: family, sleep, and addiction. And truly, it has really been metaphorically practicing like mind, body, soul. So family practice has been a lot about the body and the mind. Sleep practice really helped me to understand the mind more. And in addiction, it kind of is mind. I do a lot of the mind and the soul because really, I'm able to see the integration of the mind and body in the addiction practice. And so those are the areas that I practice and enjoy. I had to kind of create that, long story short, by kind of getting off of the hamster wheel where I was just in the hospital working all the time, and I really didn't feel like I was living my life in purpose. And I said, you know what, I need a reboot and really figure this, what I'm doing. And so I looked very closely at these areas that are very important to healing and living abundantly. So these areas are underrepresented, but very important for people to have a self-care and also healthy connections and relationships. So those are the three areas that I touch, that I practice.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And next question is, what type of addictions do you cover?
Mostly, that's a great question. Mostly I cover opiate addiction. There's a big epidemic going on with opiate addiction. And so I research the problem. And as a strategy, I said, this is a problem. You know, I wanted to be a part of the solution. And I felt like because of my background with my parents who both suffered with addiction, I was able to offer heart in the matter. So I'm able to bring both the knowledge but also the heart and deliver in a compassionate way, which is really what people, particularly in addiction, patients suffer from: self-sabotage and critical voice and need to learn how to be compassionate again. And that's actually even how I was able to, forgive my parents and learn kind of that skill. And so I chose opiate just because it was a problem and it's a crisis pretty much. There are not enough doctors. And so I really wanted to start in a field where it would be kind of easier for me to go and build up the practice, and therefore, because there's a shortage, I would be able to grow and build up pretty quickly, but I also knew I would have a lot of heart to offer because of my experience as well.
Yeah, no, it's, that's the thing. So, moving into another question is, how different are addictions, and are some easier than others?
You know, the addictions all have this commonality of hijacking your wise brain. So what happens is all the addictions cause us to basically live in this survival brain, where the brain tricks us into thinking we need the drug or the behavior to survive. And we're in this loop of automaticity. And so every addiction, behavioral or drug or substance or alcohol, puts you on this loop of this automaticity of, I need this drug or this behavior to survive. And we no longer have those deep connections to our wise mind that is a part of emotional regulation and, decision making. What makes us human and what makes us connect appropriately, love ourselves and be compassionate and open and receptive, things like this. And so when the wise mind is offline, then the person becomes very much into just kind of instinctive living, and they don't really know how to manage their emotions, and they just find themselves in this cycle of seeking the behavior of the drug to really feel normal. Initially it's for a high, and then it's really to prevent withdrawal. And so it is a disease of the brain, even though it's the stigma that the patient has some kind of choice. But in fact, the drug or the behavior has hijacked, you know, the motivation circuit, the choice circuits, the learning circuits. And so the memories of the drug and creates this, you know, echo or this voice of you need the drug or the behavior to survive. And so it's really not a choice anymore for the patient. And so it's really all the drugs and behaviors kind of do the same pattern, just at, you know, more escalated levels. And so there would be a drug, for example, that causes, you know, a different type of withdrawal phenomena, but physiologically and emotionally, but they're all taking us offline from our wise mind. And so my job is to kind of guide them and treat the physiology and the withdrawal so that they can then use the therapies to integrate and have that wise mind back and available to them.
Mm-hmm. What's resonating mm-hmm. with me is that although there is stigma, it's important to recognize. It's important to recognize that it's a disease, and we need to show compassion and help people recover from this disease.
Yes, correct. Compassion is bar none the number one piece, the number one emotion and practice that we talk about. Also boundaries, you know, understanding how to know when it's okay to say no, being okay with what's okay and what's not okay. Also being honest that you're hurting, and that helps to clear out your heart when you're in a safe, non-judgmental space, and you're talking to yourself as if you love yourself. You're talking to yourself how you would talk with someone you love. And that is when you start to clear out the heart and you're able to begin to heal and really listen to that intuitive voice that's been there the whole time, but you've not been able to hear it because of the addiction. And so compassion is what I have seen really helps patients to be receptive to what the emotion is trying to tell them, the negative emotions they're trying to tell them, whether it's a self-sabotage or they're being self-critical, they're angry or they're guilty, they feel guilty or shameful. What is that emotion trying to tell you? And to feel the emotion instead of saying, I am the emotion. Feel the emotion, because the emotion is not the totality of them. It's trying to teach you something. So to listen to what the lesson is. And really it's about focusing then so that they're aware of, okay, this is, you know, I've been suppressing these emotions and coping with this substance or behavior. How do I listen and then meet that unmet need that they're covering up. And so it's being compassionate about, you know, saying, hey, what's happened to me? I'm the way I am because of what's happened. Not, I'm a bad person, you know, and really talking lovingly back to themselves because maybe they didn't have this compassion. It's very interesting what we need to become resilient, even, which is something that the compassion's a piece of really, really developing resiliency. We all have it, and addiction undermines our resiliency. And so using the skills of compassion to bring resiliency back out is really nice to see the patients, you know, really start to actually come up with the answers when they start with compassion. You know, they're able to figure out because now they are focused in on what's happened and they are able to reorganize. And so when you're aware, then you're able to start to change and reorganize. And that starts with being honest, but also compassionate to yourself.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other questions is, how hard it is to overcome addiction?
You know what? I saw this in my parents, and my father never overcame it. My mother was able to. And I tell you, this is very difficult. It can be a lifelong process, really, of treating this, in some cases, depending on the addiction, with medical treatment and also therapies. It's also about the connections, healthy connections, losing toxic people, places, and things that are triggers for you, and kind of redesigning your life with healthier connections and cues. So it takes a lot of work. I tell my patients, just like we're not, you know, we're born with muscles, but we're not automatically an athlete. We are, you know, we're born to learn. We're born with, you know, these emotions, and we need to learn how to focus in on the problem, but then to be receptive to what we are to learn instead of reactive. But I'm always looking at what pain that people are trying to cover up, and then dealing with the root, the source of the pain, and how to problem solve through that pain. Certainly, it's a learning, too, how to substitute healthy behaviors that serve you well in place of the addiction. And this takes a time because the brain has to literally rewire. As I tell patients, through compassion, be patient. It's a process. Relapse happens. It's educating the family around relapse prevention, but also so that they're aware, you know what I mean, that this is a lifelong, it's a journey, and that the journey is really, you know, more important than the destination. And so I think it takes seeing that, because I saw my parents struggle with addiction and what it did to our family, with the abuse and the trauma, I feel like it takes that understanding to really be able to empathize with the patient and the families, and practice from the heart in a safe, non-judgmental space for them.
Oh, yeah. So you talked about that, you know, your father never recovered, but your mother did. So what was the difference between them?
Mm-hmm. I think with my father, that is such a good question. With my father, you know, he was a jazz musician, and he was very much kind of the behind the scenes, like the composer. He wrote everyone's part, and he was very, very creative. And I think for him, he had traumas, unresolved traumas that he did not resolve. And so in that line of work where he's a jazz musician, he was well-respected. He played with Coltrane, George Benson, Stanley Turrentine on a couple of albums with them. He had that pressure, too, to always kind of create. And I think for him, he was hiding behind the pain with the substance, and it was very, very accessible for him in that lifestyle. And because he didn't know how to cope with his pain, he used the drugs to cover up the pain. He was abusive to our family. And I talk about how it's like we lived in a prison. You know, the phones were tapped, and literally there were bars on the window, and so we looked perfect on the outside, but on the inside we were literally like in a prison. And, you know, he was very abusive physically, sexually, emotionally, and you know, our house was in poor conditions, and we lived with rats and bats. He would bound us with duct tape and beat us. And you know, I think for him, this was him really not knowing how to deal with frustration. You know, the lifestyle that sometimes he had big contracts, sometimes he was poor and struggling, and, you know, there were opportunities that he would have to, at that time, kind of give up songs that he'd written, you know, to kind of play the game, and then he would be taken advantage of. And so it was very frustrating for him, and if he didn't have drugs, he would beat the family. And this is what addiction can do. And so I took up the courage one day to say, you know what? This is enough pain. I wanted to be safe, instinctively kind of knew, you know what? There's something else. There's some possibility. And I wanted to be safe. And so when he took that partially loaded gun and fired it to my head on the empty chamber, I was like, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm out of here. And, you know, I cried for help, went through foster care system, and that was very turbulent. But all the time I had, all you need is one nurturing adult, one relationship, one connection. I call that a safe sounding board, a safe non-judgmental space for you to clear out your heart, for you to get feedback, for you to have someone who believes in you and who's compassionate. And that is really what helped me cling to this thread of hope, so that I could become confident and, you know, and see that, oh, you know, I really can be the change I want to see. And when I started to see that, you know what, when I, you know, I talk with my mentor and I, you know, do my work and, you know, making good grades, I'm seeing positive feedback. This is something I want to keep doing. You know, so that I can, yes, because I was seeing, oh, these positive actions were creating, and positive behaviors were creating, you know, basically an alternate reality for me. So it was opposite of what I come through. And so I said, you know what? I really want to keep doing this. And this is the feedback that I'm getting. And that was very important for me to see, so I could have that self-efficacy, knowing that I could be the change that I wanted to see, and I could create that, which
that
helped me
sense.
To build that confidence.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So a few other questions have rolled in, and let's see how many questions we can take, because we're kind of getting closer, closer to the end of the show. So one of the questions is, can you just put your mind to it and overcome the addiction?
In some cases, no, because there's a biology involved, and the withdrawal. And so this is where medication is going to help prevent the withdrawal and also kind of reset the brain so that you're not in this automatic loop of I need the drug or the substance to survive. And so that is where the biology comes into play. You've used the drug, the thermostat has broken basically, and the receptors in the brain kind of need to be reset and try to find a new set point. And it takes time to heal the brain, because what's happened with the drug is there has been basically an over compensation or a super physiologic response. You know, food and things like sex, those increase good, feel good hormones, but not at the level of the drug or the addictive behavior. And so when this happens, I tell patients there's no free ride in the brain. There's going to be a consequence. And what happens is the brain is always trying to seek homeostasis and balance. But when there's too much feel-good hormones, it's like breaking the thermostat. So to reset this takes time. It takes a long time. And that's where medication is critical to resetting the receptors so that you don't have too much command of all the feel-good hormone going on. And what happens is when you try to reset this, there's going to be a lot of emotional suppression that was happening because of the addiction is going to be released, and that's where the therapies come into play, specific therapies to help with coping as these emotions come out. And, you know, sometimes then you find that underneath all this, there was the chemical imbalance that caused mental illness, and it's treating that with medication. So it's a mind, body, and a spiritual treatment, really, to help the patients to have that wise mind back online. And it takes time to bring the brain and those connections back to a normal state in the brain. So it is not this like mind over matter. You need matter and mind.
And it's important to recognize that fact. You're so right, Jamila, that in the sense that we need help and it's okay to go get the help, because this, our conversation today, very clearly defines that it's, forget about the stigma, it's an underlying disease. And just like, you know, if you have a flu, you go to the doctor. Similarly, for this, you need to go to the doctor. And there are several questions. Let's see how many we can. We'll give some questions for next few minutes, and then we'll talk about your book. Are there stressors around addictions?
There is always a stressor that is, most of the time, excuse me, there is a stressor. There is either a loss or there is, a financial stressor, interpersonal stressor, social stressor, trauma, unresolved trauma. So I see stressors in maybe 90% of cases. And so in managing the stress, is very critical to the treatment, which is what my platform, kind of out of the book that you've read, what the Reboot, Repair, Rebirth helps with, management of stress. Also, sometimes patients, they had access and they want to experiment. And the earlier that they experiment, the more damage is done, because the brain is primed to seek addictive behavior and addictive substance. And so that is why, in either case, rather it was experimenting or a stressor, it is an illness. It's a brain disease because just like a diabetic needs insulin, the brain is now, you know, needing this substance to, at first, it's for euphoria and make the patient, you know, maybe feel like they have more energy, or maybe they're self-medicating to cover up pain so they feel better. But eventually the substance is there to prevent withdrawal and for them to feel normal. And that's really where it becomes, the brain has changed and it becomes an illness. It's a disease. And mm-hmm. so it is stressors that will trigger patients most of the time. In some cases, it's experimentation. And in either case, they both respond to treatment. And so bottom line is asking for help because the treatment is available. And, you know, really being honest that you're hurting. And I think a lot of times we have a hard time breaking through that denial. And so the first step is really just being honest, asking those powerful questions. You know, is substance abuse around me? Am I in an abusive relationship? Am I witnessing mental illness? Am I abusing substances? What am I covering up? You know, am I suffering with, you know, insomnia or brain fog, depression?
Great questions. And a couple of, like, you know, the common thread is running is, I think, so people really connected and they're thinking how could it have been stopped, you know, what you and your family went through. So the questions that have come up is that, was the foster care better or worse in those days? Were there social services? Did they do anything about it?
Yeah, the foster care system was very tumultuous. And back in those days, it was in the 80s. And because my father was a force to be reckoned with, it's a very high-profile case. It was very hard. People did not want to take in this 14-year-old girl. And even though I was smart and I took the pain inside, kind of hiding in books. And so it was easy to take me in because I just kind of stayed to myself. My dad made it very difficult. And so for all of us, my siblings, we rotated around a lot. The saving grace for me is I was already at a secondary high school co-ed that had a boarding school, and I had gotten in before foster care based on my grades. So it was a private school in Chattanooga, Tennessee, the Baylor School, and I was converted to a boarder after a very painful kind of rotating through some bad homes. And, you know, I was in one home that was okay, but then I ran away to see my mom because I missed her, and then that scared the foster parent, and then I went to the shelter, and then I was like an orphan, and, you know, just, it was like, oh my gosh, I wish I could just disappear into the paint of the wall, you know? And there's a lot of bullying, and it's very hard to find, you know, food. Like, when you're hungry and you're like, oh my goodness, that's the reality. But I think resources, the foster care system and case management, all of that has been revamped over the years. There's still going to be some bad homes. There still is, and that's why it's very critical to advocate for yourself. I always advocated to my guardian ad litem, look, I am not safe. I'm still not safe, and I want to be safe. Mm-hmm. You cannot do anything, you know what I mean, positive, productive. It's very hard when you're not safe. It's the first step to create it.
My heart goes out to you, Jamila. You know, every time I hear your story, it's like, I'm so inspired and amazed by you that you kept marching forward and you pushed through it, and look where you have come, how far you have come along. And thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing your story. So very quickly, if you could share the name of your book, and listeners, I have to say that, you know, I have a copy of Dr. Jamila Battle's book, and it is a great book. It's a life-changing book. So if you want to share your book, and where can people get it?
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon. It was a bestseller in 5 categories last year when I published it. It's available on Kindle, really any store, Barnes & Noble, any small bookstores, local bookstores, it can be ordered. It's also available in national, larger bookstores. And the follow-up to the book is an online self-help system, Reboot, Repair, Rebirth. It's like a community, and also has a lot of self-help and some resources. And right now, the course, Reboot, Repair, Rebirth, is being created as an online self-help tool that's currently in beta testing, where it takes you through the steps of how to create abundance, how to move from the pain to living intentionally and creating that peace and prosperity we all, really it's our birthright, we all have. And it's all, we have access to that. We all can tap into that because we all have that resilience, which is at the core of it. The ability to bounce back and adapt. And it's about being flexible, vulnerable, honest, focused, setting priorities, but asking for help, because we cannot do it all on our own. It's asking for the help, having your connections around you that are there, like your cheerleaders and someone to help you see new approach, new perspective. And so the reboot is like starting over, admitting you're hurting, and kind of getting yourself to the change you want to see. And then repairs all this, the work it takes to clear out your heart. And that starts with emotion and learning what the emotions are telling us.
You are so right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And everything. And you can find not only this, but a whole lot more in the book and in this program. And if they wanted to reach out to you, what would be a good email or contact information to reach out to you?
Yes. So the website is www.drjbattle.com. That's drjbattle.com. Or they can go to www.rebootrepairrebirth.com, and that will take them to more information about the system and the community, the online healing system and community. I do want to say that the reward in all of this is, once you do the hard work of repair, rebirth is kind of is what you've created, where you're fully integrated and a whole centered version of self that able to learn now about maintenance and yes, and creating
absolutely
those healthy boundaries to protect what you have. Yep, you've created.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, listeners, thank you for all these questions. And Jamila, you know, thank you so much for sharing your story and joining us. And I'm so glad that you took your patient.
I am too.
And
phenomenal,
thank you.
Story.
Yes. No, that's great. And thank you again for joining us. And very quickly, I want to touch a question. You know, the question has popped up a couple of times. How easy it is for people to get their work published. So listeners, I'll share with you, as a book writing coach, it is easy to get published if you are in right hands. And you can also Google up, and if you have a book that's published, you can definitely go and get self-published on CreateSpace and Kindle. There are tutorials, but sometimes it can get very cumbersome. And if there are any questions, feel free to reach out to me at contact@diviaparekh.com. And it's about what you want to do and defining it and how much time you want to spend. So again, I would like to give a very special thank you to Rebel for making this show possible. And thank you, listeners, for making this show possible, because without you, we could not do anything. And thank you, Jamila, for joining us and sharing your story. So, so grateful that you are not only at such a great place and you are a shining light to everyone. Thank you, and listeners, to reach out to me at contact@diviaparekh.com and let me know what stories I can bring to serve and support you. Until next time, be powerful and be brilliant. Take care.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.diviaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@diviaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.